Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, how healthy are you, really? You might feel very healthy. I certainly did, and then found out I wasn't as healthy as I thought I was, even though I'd lived an exemplary life, and still do. So there's a lot we need to know about our health that we just haven't learned enough yet. So I'm interviewing in this show a good friend, a man who I've known for about 40 years. He's a nutritionist, a scientist, researcher, and somebody I've always been impressed with and always look forward to talking with him. And you'll see that he has a lot to say. Steve Halpern, welcome to Energy Stew.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I love this topic because we both have seen so-called healthy people without symptoms suddenly wind up with heart attacks. Some are lucky enough and they get treatment and live, and some die. And many of them felt good. So the real question is what we call preventive medicine really preventive?
Well, and even the testing, the normal testing, doesn't reveal enough.
Right, it doesn't reveal enough because they're looking for overt symptoms of a disease. They're not trained and often not comfortable with healthy people. You see, doctors have been trained...
Or people who appear healthy.
Appear healthy. And if you come into a doctor's office and the doctor says, well, how are you? And you say, fine. They say, well, why are you here? Right?
Yes.
And they might do some basic screening, you know, look at your cholesterol and look at your sugar levels, you know, those obvious things. But we have much, much more sophisticated, you know, testing that's available.
That most doctors don't bother.
They have no clue.
They don't even know how to read it.
They have no clue.
Right.
You know, and I know you told me a story about a doctor who had been perfectly healthy, right? And wound up with a heart attack, dead. Right?
Right. Oh, yeah, recently.
Recently.
Mm-hmm.
And even my own brother, you know, 5 years ago, was playing music, was doing hiking, was walking around, and suddenly got a heart attack. And when they examined him, he had major artery issues. Okay. I didn't have the screening on Howie. Okay. I didn't know that screening. So there are lots of screening tools and preventive health tools that are available. I do that in my practice now. We use tests from the Cleveland Heart Lab that test something called oxidation. When an apple is left out and it turns brown, that's oxidation. If that oxidation happens in your arteries, you have blocked arteries. If you have excessive oxidation in your joints, you have inflamed joints and arthritis.
And inflamed arteries, too.
Inflamed arteries. We measure this oxidation levels, and we measure it almost 7 cardiac factors way beyond cholesterol. Things like nitric oxide, where you can open up the blood vessels. There's a chemical produced by certain probiotics that when someone would consume meat or they could consume choline, could produce a chemical that damages the arteries. Now, how would you know that? You wouldn't know that unless you test it.
Right.
Okay, you wouldn't know if you can't produce enough nitric oxide. You wouldn't know many of these factors. You know, there's a funny story, Peter. Person goes into the doctor and gets the exam. Doctor says, oh, you're perfectly fine. And walks out and drops dead. Then he goes to the nurse, and the nurse, what should we do? And the nurse says, what should we do? Turn around the other way going into the office. You know, that's a classic issue. Now, I think a lot of this has to do with, again, the other area of, do you have certain genetic issues? Especially in my field, do you have certain genetic nutrition issues?
Okay. Right, and not only genetic, but cultural, because many of us have genes from other parts of the world. I remember years ago, a woman was in Italy calling me, she was an athlete, a runner, calling me for help. She was having a lot of issues, health issues. And she was a competitive athlete. And she was in Italy. turns out she was Japanese. And I said, what are you eating? She says, I'm eating Italian food.
Oh, yes.
It wouldn't work for her.
Yeah, how interesting. You know, Japanese women have very, very low incidence of breast cancer. When they move to, say, Hawaii.
Or Italy.
Their rates of breast cancer now correspond to the country they're in.
Sure.
So another interesting thing, let's talk about the fat. And people will say, oh, how about the Eskimos? They eat tons and tons of blubber and don't get necessarily cardiovascular disease. They have a different gene. They have a different gene for processing the fat.
Right.
Okay. So I think often we run into all these nutrition fads and they're not being individually applied. Right? Someone might do very well on a meat diet and never have a problem.
Right.
Here's a perfect example. Let's you know, this is one of my favorite anecdotes now. There's a study called the aging study being done at Einstein in the Bronx. And they're studying centurions, people 100 and plus. Because they're trying to figure out what gene markers and what, you know, how they live to this age with healthiness, being very healthy. And they looked at, were they smokers? You know, did they eat meat? Were they obese? Did they not exercise? The majority of them had all those negatives. They smoked and they drank and they didn't exercise and they lived to that age. Does that mean it's good to do all those things? No, it just shows you the power of those genes,
right?
Which we don't know how to do this.
Right.
But we do know something very, very interesting now, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit. And the whole field of epigenetics and nutrigenomics. Epigenetics is the idea that you can turn on and turn off genes. So say you have a cancer gene. Say you have a BRCA cancer gene. Is it on or is it off? Very, very important. Now, the other thing is, how do you influence that on and off? And that's the whole field of nutrigenomics. And the idea that certain nutrients in the right dose and the right amount can turn on and turn off genes.
Depending on your genes, too.
An example. Many of us in the nutrition field have heard about the benefit of antioxidants, right? We talked about oxidative stress in the arteries. And the idea that, well, you eat lots of berries and fruits. They have a family of antioxidants called polyphenols, very beneficial. Taking some vitamin C. Here's a perfect example. We have antioxidant systems in our body that produce these protective antioxidants. Okay, the glutathione system, the superoxide system. They are there to compensate for the oxidative stress.
Unless they don't.
They don't. So now, here's where exercise comes in. And by the way, a new study showed that exercise can change brain connections. Very important, even in some Alzheimer's patients. So the exercise we know is important. Where might the exercise or excessive exercise be detrimental? The purpose of exercise as a stressor is to cause your body to produce more antioxidants from the exercise stress. It's an upregulator. What happens if you don't have that ability or the exercise stress is too much for your compensation or your upregulation, you wind up with damage.
Right, because, well, exercise is stress. And so it does damage us. And then the body responds with all of these healing mechanisms,
right,
unless they're not working properly.
And then you wind up, and we've seen this, with marathoners who have damaged arteries, okay, or heart damage, because in those situations, their antioxidant system couldn't compensate. Now, so where do we fit this whole nutrigenomics and what we just said? You can take certain foods that nutrigenomically increase your antioxidant system. That's
good.
Very beneficial.
Yeah.
You could take lots of antioxidants post-exercise. Now, why would you, this is very interesting, why would you want to take the antioxidants post-exercise? if you took the antioxidants...
Because to handle the damage from the exercise.
Right, but here's what they found. If you say take vitamin C before you exercise, you could blunt your own upregulation. It could act... The antioxidant before can blunt your adaption.
Wow.
So it's the post that
Who
you want.
Who would know?
Yeah, it's the post. So, for instance, broccoli seed. It's only available in a very potent supplement. You can't eat broccoli seed. Okay. One of the things that broccoli seed will do is produce a chemical called sulforaphane, which upregulates 230 beneficial antioxidant systems in the body.
Wow.
But again, why? Many plant substances were designed to keep insects from eating the plant. They're slightly toxic, but to the body, they stimulate our system, just like the antioxidant system. Okay. Or, as we know, small amounts of bad things are actually good because they upregulate our adaption.
Right.
I'm going to get off point a little bit. We talked about the nutrigenomics.
Hormesis.
That exercises hormesis. That's the whole point. Uh-huh. It's a stressor as long as it doesn't bypass your ability to adapt. And that we have to test for. When I said those heart tests, we're measuring your antioxidant systems. Go out and exercise. Do a heavy amount. Then get tested. Let's see what it looks like. Let's see if your body is compensating for those kind of things.
Right.
So it's all about...
But these are advanced tests.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to get the standard. Most places are not even standard. Most cardiologists are even not familiar with it. I think it gets back to the whole point of... All stress is not bad. Okay. It's our ability to compensate for stressors, right? Now, let's just switch this around. How many stresses at one time do you want to put on your body, right? So let's say you have an emotional stress, right? And now you're eating really bad, right?
So you have all these cortisol levels,
right,
that are causing... Can cause inflammation.
Exactly right.
Oxidative stress.
Oxidative stress, inflammation. So when you're going through something, is the time to be most gentle on your body so you're not putting too many stresses on the adaption.
When I was younger and I was in emotional stress, I would go for a hard workout and that would really relieve my emotional stress.
Right, because emotional stress... I'm glad you said this. Will generate oxidative stress, and it will affect the muscles and the brain. The brain burns lots of glucose. Okay, brain is a major supplier.
That's how it gets its fuel from glucose.
But a byproduct of glucose is oxidative compounds.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes.
So when you increase your antioxidant system, it affects the antioxidants in your brain as well as everybody. It's not, it's every system in the body, every cell in the body is going to be upregulated. That's why people feel better when they exercise to a certain point. Here's what I've noticed. If you feel good after the exercise or some period of time after the exercise, that's a good sign. If you feel bad, that's not a good sign.
Okay. Right? All right.
It's not a good sign.
So that helps right? a lot to know that.
If I go out and I do, an hour and a half of work, really intensive work. Now I might feel 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever, but a half hour, 45 minutes, I'm feeling great. My antioxidant system kicked in. You see what I'm saying?
Good.
My adaptive system kicked in. Right. Now, your adaptive system is already moving, then take the polyphenols, then take the grapes and the raspberries and the strawberries and the blueberries and the green tea, then take all those, then a little vitamin C. Take those
following the workout.
Following the workout, because you're not going to blunt your response. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Don't want to.
Yeah. So all the good stuff keeps the body from needing to do its own good stuff.
Exactly right. It's like recovering from injury and you're walking with a crutch and then you won't give up the crutch. You never get right. stronger.
Right.
And I think that's where the studies got really confused. If you look at the exercise antioxidant studies, they showed negative response. That's because the timing was wrong. You follow
right.
what I'm saying?
It was too early.
It was too early. Okay, so we got back to nutrigenomics, and we got, you know, we covered some testing issues and the food choices. The web has created tons of confusion. Lots of great information, but lots of confusion, because everyone's promoting a different kind of supplement. You know, supplements are now in, thank goodness. even the head of the FDA, the new head of the FDA, or the man who's going to be appointed, says he takes lots of supplements. So,
oh, that's good.
So we're on track. I think the things to watch out, the basic guidelines, unless you're going to get nutrition tested, magnesium. There was an Israeli study, again, kind of really fascinating, and they looked at soldiers in training. And what they found is, and they measured their magnesium before and after. After intensive training, they're all deficient in magnesium. And it took 3 months for them orally to get replenished, because it's very difficult orally. You only absorb a certain amount. That's why sometimes we use intravenous, you know.
Or also transdermal.
Or transdermal. But, so what's that mean? It means a lot of athletes or people under stress can be magnesium deficient. 5,000 enzyme systems in the body depend on magnesium.
So people are afraid they're taking too much.
No. It's, you're not going to take too much. In fact, Dr. Milner Seelig, for 40 years, studied magnesium, started a medical journal called Magnesium, which is still existed. And her recommendation was, depending on bowel tolerance, you could take up to 2,000 milligrams.
Uh-huh. Right?
You can't poison yourself with magnesium. The only thing you would get would be diarrhea. And you have to play with different magnesiums and the timing.
And even so, your body's not absorbing that much.
Yeah. So symptoms, general symptoms of magnesium, fatigue, muscle cramping, very big on muscle cramping, twitching. You know,
That's if you're deficient?
Deficient.
Okay.
Eye twitching.
Because that means it's not balancing the calcium, and the calcium is causing all this twitching.
Maybe. I do remember that the famous Dr. Ravisi, he would do a reflex test for magnesium on everyone that came into the office, because it's much more likely going to be people not calcium deficient. From my experience, we've been oversold on the calcium. In fact, there was a study.
Yes, I agree.
There was a study that additional calcium, especially in males, gave more risk of cardiovascular disease. I think the Dairy Council sold us on the whole calcium issue. People worried about the calcium. I point out that Asian population does not drink any milk, and they have the lowest rates of osteoporosis in the world. So we can talk about that and the vitamin D. Everyone should be screened for vitamin D. I know you're a big fan of vitamin D supplementation.
To make sure they have enough.
I think magnesium is a much, much bigger issue in osteo. And also, again, this whole oxidative stress. You know, we have things, osteocytes, for the production of bone, and high oxidative stress will interfere with bone production.
Mm.
So isn't that interesting, that resistance exercise? Why would resistance exercise strengthen the bones? Because if you're lowering the oxidative stress, you're going to allow the osteocytes to produce the bone.
Through the hormesis of exercise.
Yeah, through the hormesis, resistance exercise.
Right.
We know that no one ever
responds by doing a healing of that.
Healing of that. So I didn't, you know, no one ever explained before, how come resistance exercise will have an effect on osteoporosis? Because it's lowering the oxidative stress levels.
Right.
And seniors, as people get older, these systems to cope with these oxidative stress assaults are less. Now, let's talk about diet again. Taking the wrong fats. I think healthy fats, you know, fish oil fats, the EPA, the DHA, I think the olive oil, the monounsaturated fat from olive oil, very cardiovascular benefit. Make sure it's not rancid. Make sure it's fresh. Make sure it's good virgin olive oil. No doubt about these. I think that someone who's had bypass or had clogged arteries or had a heart attack really needs to look very, very closely at the research on a very low-fat diet.
But low-fat, you mean outside of the olive oil and the fish oil?
Yes. because there are some studies on the brain now in fish oils, brain connections, and electrical function of the heart. I think throwing out the essential fatty acids with the whole fat business is a big mistake.
Okay, explain.
Because you need these essential fatty acids for your cell membranes.
The right ones.
Yeah, the right ones. So I think to go and throw out everything and say no oils at all, I don't think is valid. Okay. I think the issue of saturated fat causing oxidative stress is an issue. High glucose intake will cause oxidative stress. High carbohydrate intake.
What is called high? How do you know that you're taking too much?
How do you know if you're taking too much sugar or carbohydrates? You have to measure over a period. That's where some of these testing comes in.
So the idea, all right, so let's talk about testing because we're getting late in the show.
Okay.
And I want people to understand that we don't know enough about our bodies. I have low cholesterol, and yet my arteries produce plaque.
And let's do the reverse.
Yes.
I have 325 cholesterol since I was 28 and working in the field.
Right.
And I had the testing, and my arteries are like the Holland Tunnel.
See, that's the point. That's why we all need to find out what the truth is, other than the standard tests that don't give us the inside information.
Yes. This whole idea, lots and lots of people with 150, 160 cholesterol, like you said, kind of blocked arteries.
Exactly.
And so, yes, LDL is important in HDL, and oxidized LDL, they're all valuable. But you have to put the whole pattern
and
together.
Including your genes and your diet and your exercise, and understand what the chemistry is by testing for it to see if it's working for you or not.
Right.
That you might have to change a lot that you don't even realize.
Right.
So you're somebody who has access to a lot of testing.
Yeah, luckily I work with an integrative doctor, and because I work with an integrative doctor, I have access to all this testing. Usually you go to a nutritionist or even a health coach, and if they're not associated with a doctor, they don't have the ability to do all these medical testing.
That's wonderful. So there are tests like for oxidative stress. You work with, you know how to produce tests to send to the Cleveland Heart Lab. And they're in the forefront of oxidative stress testing.
Right.
And many other tests.
Many other tests. Many of them are covered, you know, where possible under insurance for the most part. We can arrange that. I think that's a big advantage. But I think, you know, coaching someone or doing nutrition counseling without having access to all this testing.
Is worthless.
Is worthless. And also, I think, here's another big problem. People now, I see this, Peter, people going online and paying for testing, right? They're doing all this kind of stuff. That's great, but you have to have the experience to interpret it.
Right.
One reference range, you know, a lot of these tests have reference ranges that really are not all that accurate.
And also you want to compare the tests to each other and, you know, the different numbers that by themselves might not be meaningful.
That's right. You can have someone that has a number off and it means nothing. Now they'll get a test
because
back.
Because all the other numbers are good, it makes
right.
up for it.
So they'll get it back from an online company or whatever with a reference range. And then what do you do with it? Now, real quick, we can do, and there are people doing gene testing like 23andMe. And we can also do, a probiotic DNA testing. These are all very interesting. I think for many of these, the science has not caught up to what it means yet. Okay, you can have this information, and it's fun, but it has to be interpreted in a context. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, you get back, and this is where the FDA was a little concerned with the 23andMe, because people see a gene, and it says...
And you get frightened.
And you get frightened, and it's not in context. How are the genes interacting? Is the gene, and like I said before, you could have a gene. Is the gene on or off? It's a whole other issue. As exciting as it is, I think the marketing of this is still premature. I think for gathering population information is great. Like I said, there's a whole probiotic DNA testing. You can test the DNA in your probiotics. And the whole purpose is really is not so much individual, but to gather data to see what all this means. Right. And that was the whole purpose of 22.
So there's more and more and more. We're coming into a time where things will make more sense.
And I'm going to leave you this anecdote. Okay, this is kind of very interesting. We do testing now. In about 5 to 7 years, it's predicted that your blood tests will test for 5,000 substances. So we make an assumption that this is the whole picture. It's not.
Right, we don't know it yet. We're still getting there.
And that's why you
need... There are a lot of tests still that have to be invented.
Invented and measurements that we have no idea about. Right. Okay. And so this is why working with someone who can help you listen to yourself is so important.
So let's say somebody wants to consult with you. How do they reach you?
They can send, I have an email.
Okay, what is it?
NutraSteve, NutraSteve at hotmail.com. I also have a blog where I'll put some of this information. It's Nutra, Nutra, Steve, 9 at WordPress.com. They can do that. And I'm sure if we'll put contact on your...
Steve Halpern, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stewart.
It's a pleasure.
It's talking with you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stewart, PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748.
I'll give my number, Peter.
Okay.
914-960-5569.
That's great, Steve. And thanks so much for listening. Thank you.